Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White from Cormdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the secret shame of the middle class.
Yeah, we're vamping off a cover story in The Atlantic, May 2016 issue. That's the title of the article. There's a picture on the cover of the magazine of a guy with a paper bag over his head, and his pockets are empty. And he's sort
of sad face drawn on the paper bag.
Yeah, pulling out his empty pockets. The secret shame of the middle class. And here's what the author is getting at. According to a Federal Reserve survey, 47% of people in America would not be able to come up with $400 in the event of an emergency. So the secret shame of the middle class is that though the middle class on the outside seems to sort of have their financial life in order, if a car breaks down or if something goes wrong with the house or if they needed to come up with $400 tomorrow, almost half of Americans would not have the financial freedom to do that. And so what this article highlights and gives us a chance to talk about is just the reality of stewardship. What does it mean to be wise with our finances? How does God call us to a different type of life, to a countercultural sort of life? And maybe even more deeply, how do we need to start recognizing idolatries in our culture and how money, affluence, spending, consumption really gets at and drives some of the core idolatries in American society. I was reading, I think it was a commentary the other day, and the author, oh, it was a book, not a commentary. The author was quoting someone else who suggested that in the world we live in now, global capitalism has become what nation states used to be. So like when you read the Bible and like people are identifying as like I'm an Edomite or I'm a Canaanite or I'm an Israelite and sort of like their identity was wrapped up in nation states, that actually capitalism is that today. It's taken the place of the nation state as the dominant sort of defining reality that shapes the structures in which we live and therefore the dominant shaper of idolatry, which I thought was really provocative. Guys, let me just summarize the conclusions in this article and then we'll talk about them a little bit. The author is basically writing a little bit autobiographically. He says, hey, I'm one of these people that can't come up with $400, and let me tell you about my life and how I got here. And he makes a number of interesting points. The author's name, I should probably quote that so that we give appropriate credit, Neil Gabler, who's a freelance writer. And he says he uses the phrase financial impotence to talk about this condition, meaning that, man, I don't have the power to do anything financially. Two reports published last year by the Pew Charitable Trust found that 55% of households don't have enough liquid savings to replace a month's worth of lost income. So 55% of households, if you lost your job tomorrow, you wouldn't be able to make it for a month. It's an equal opportunity malady, strikes across every demographic divide. So this is not particular to any race or any class, but this is pretty much across the board in America. A lot of people point to credit card debt as a main culprit. Across the country, credit card debt stands at $5,700 per household. And that includes all the households that have zero. So if you'd only take the people that actually have credit card debt, average debt is more than $15,000 per household. So credit card debt obviously takes a huge chunk out of people's disposable income and makes it really hard to get ahead and save. The author there's something I appreciate about this article because he says, hey, I'm responsible for getting here. I lived beyond my means. I made some bad financial decisions. And so he's not sort of blaming the system or he's just saying, hey, I got myself here. But there is a problem when half of our country doesn't have enough money in savings to cover a simple expense of $400. The American Psychological Association found money to be the country's number one stressor. And so if you just ask the question, what causes you stress, anxiety, concern, and how many of those things are related to directly or indirectly money? The answer probably for most Christians listening to this podcast is, yep, that's a lot of my stress and concern is how we're going to make ends meet or how we're going to pay off debt or how we're going to send our kids to college if we choose to do that or how we're going to make our lives work financially. So I thought it was interesting for The Atlantic to sort of put this issue on the front burner and say we need to have a national conversation about the reality of our lack of actual financial liquidity. So guys, here's a simple question. This author is raising a cultural malady, and a malady that strikes even at the root of many Christians. How does the gospel and just biblical wisdom start to give us an answer to this problem? How does the church perhaps have something meaningful to say here?
One of the things that comes to mind for me is the posturing that seems to be happening through our finances. He says here in this article that it wasn't even so much about him keeping up with the Joneses, but he wanted to provide a culture where his kids could keep up with the Joneses. And so just if you look at the gospel and what that can do to your finances, it frees us to not posture to be somebody that we're not financially. And interestingly enough, the reason I kept reading this article for The Atlantic was when he started self-identifying as a contributor to the 47%. As a Christian, becoming a Christian later on in my life, or, you know, late teens, and then getting my life together into the early 20s, and then there's college in there, so I don't know if that counts, but for some it might count. For me, it didn't. The discipline of just financial stewardship and then even tithing and giving was actually the last financial or spiritual discipline that dropped in for me, and has had to be even in community and in the light the whole time, because I just didn't know what I was doing there. So that's intriguing to me, and also where that just personally hits me, and knowing that, man, the gospel can put the balm on all of this. And so what's fascinating to me, Bob, to your question, is just the posturing that seems to be happening.
When I read this article, something that comes to mind is Jesus's words, where your treasure is, there's your heart. Mm. And just the data here related to how people spend money, and then also the data related to savings and credit, where there just seems to be, like you were saying, Dusty, this posture of I have to get, I have to have, and I'm going to stretch every means that I have to get those things. And so the fact is nobody's saving money. Nobody's thinking long-term. There seems to be a more of kind of short-term instant gratification, a posture towards money. And I think that reveals our heart. It reveals where we are as a culture related to what's important to us. So I think as the church, one of the, if you think theologically related to heart idols and just what's important to us, but then how does that practically manifest itself? One small way, think long-term. Don't think instant gratification. What does it look like to actually be wise with money if you are confronting heart idols that you see all around you?
So let's be honest that as pastors and leaders, these stats are true probably even within the Christian community, right? There's lots of, I mean, as we counsel people in our church, we face a lot of issues where folks don't have any savings or folks are in significant personal consumer debt. So chances are there's lots of folks listening to this podcast that can identify and they go, okay, maybe I can handle $1,000 of an emergency, but I'm in the same boat, right? I see myself in that. So it'd be interesting for us to talk out. As I've been counseling people more and more, I've been trying to start with saying, hey, let's establish a vision of what a God-honoring future would look like, and let's acknowledge it's going to take some work to get there, but let's at least set that vision before us and say, what kind of life should we be aiming for, to use a phrase perhaps that could be helpful to people. So what I want to ask is, hey, Chris, if I'm an American Christian, I'm living in this society, I'm part of the middle class, what kind of life does the gospel call me to? Financially speaking, if I'm saying, here's the kind of sort of stewardship I should be aiming for, what is that?
Well, I think we can start by acknowledging that the gospel calls us as Christians to work hard. Like, there is nothing wrong with the ethic of work hard, go after a job that does provide financially, and you can support a family, raise a family on, and it actually is good to earn and to build a life of stability. So buying a house, having a car, having being able to provide things for your family, we should never back away from the call to work hard and provide. But Scripture also calls us to work hard and to accumulate so that we can give. And so there is also just as much thrust to giving away and how the Lord blesses you financially, that's going out from you. So whether it's giving to the church and how you're giving your offerings to the church, or whether you're blessing other people who are in need, there seems to be this call on, hey, if you have the gift of accumulating wealth, then you also have a higher level of responsibility to give away that wealth to bless other people. So I think there's those two values the gospel calls us into are ways that we can, you know, disciple people in stewardship.
Yeah, that's exactly what comes to mind as I read this article, along with Psalms like Psalm 112. Can I give generously? Can I lend generously? If I can't even come up with $400, then I'm obviously not in a position biblically to be a good steward, but also to not even help my neighbor out who might need a few hundred bucks here and there. So the aim would be, Bob, to answer your question, man, if I want to live a robust Christian life, I want to position myself even financially in order to be generous, even with money and belongings.
This is great. So, because I think it's interesting that we often don't think about the economic implications of the gospel. Hmm. But if you think about what should a faithful Christian life produce? It means I'm a producer, not a consumer, meaning mm-hmm. I'm a net giver, not a net taker, mm-hmm. right? I do have the freedom to be generous and to bless others out of my hard work, out of my stewardship, and out of my frugality. And so that, I like that as a foundational principle. Another way to say it, perhaps more provocatively, is to say a God-honoring, biblically faithful Christian should not be in a place of continuous need. Mm-hmm. Right, it's okay to have seasons of need, but I should not have a life of continuous dependence on other people. In fact, I think it's fascinating what 1 Timothy 5 said. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith. Hmm. It doesn't say he lacks wisdom and needs to grow up. It says he's denied the faith. So in other words, there's a connection between faith in God and faithfully providing for the people that are dependent on me. And to the extent that I'm not doing that, I've denied the faith. And so there's a really, really deep, important connection there.
Yeah, Psalm 37:21 says, the wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. And so there's just wisdom in not borrowing if you cannot pay back. If you don't know how you're going to pay that back, don't borrow. And if you borrow, you're not going to be able to be generous and give. So the Psalms even draws the line harshly, saying the wicked do this and the righteous do this.
Okay, great. So I imagine listeners to this podcast, probably three categories. One, folks who are sort of experiencing the fruit of biblical faithfulness in this area. Two, folks who are struggling and who feel upside down in this area. And then three, folks that are maybe younger in life and are just trying to figure out how should I live in the future? How should I sort of plan financially? And so I want to speak meaningfully to all three of those categories at the same time. But if we could just lay out some baseline biblical principles, kind of Dave Ramsey style, right? Mm-hmm. One, spend less than you make, right? Like, I think oftentimes we feel like, well, if I just made more money, X, Y, Z, right? And I always want to tell people, well, no, whatever you make now, you start there and you spend less than that. And so if that means you eat ramen noodles, then you eat ramen noodles. Like, you spend less than you make. That's the first principle. Secondly, you save, and the book of Proverbs is full of exhortations towards saving and storing up for a moment of need. And so this reality that lots of us aren't able to sort of call on savings in an emergency is not just a sign of sort of financial impropriety, but it's also a sign of just lack of wisdom. And so biblically, Christians not only should live below their means, but should establish some savings, some emergency savings that I can lean on in a time of need. And then thirdly, Give generously to the Lord, right? The biblical principle of tithing needs to be in play in the life of a faithful Christian. So, I had the privilege of having a dad who was faithful in this stuff and taught me well. And so he always said, I mean, from the first job I had, he's like, all right, 80% of that's yours. 10% of it goes in your savings account. 10% of it goes into the offering at church. That's how you live, 80-10-10. And so that was sort of my framework from the earliest time I started working was, all right, whatever my paycheck is, I get 80% of that. And the other 10% goes in my savings account. And the other 10% goes into the offering. And that's just a good baseline stewardship principle. Now, again, I realize some people are listening to this and going, well, I can't get there tomorrow. Okay. But you got to have that as a vision. You got to have that as a meaningful place to head and say, okay, if I'm not there now, how do I get there as fast as I can? Mm-hmm. And the obvious fourth principle that you've already alluded to, Mike, is just to avoid debt, you know, and, or to, if I'm in debt, pay it off as fast as I can, because the debt, you know, the proverb says the borrower becomes the lender's slave. Mm-hmm. Debt is a power relationship where I'm disempowered and I am owing pieces of my income to others. And, you know, there's times where that's a reality, but the Bible would encourage us as often as possible to be in a place where we're not borrowing and where we're not in debt.
And to your point, Bob, about it's not going to happen tomorrow, you have to be intentional about this. You can't, you don't accidentally get out of debt. You don't accidentally just stop spending more than you make. You have to be intentional. And so if you're a person that's really good at crunching numbers and you like to sit down and you can hammer out a budget and it's just a matter of you need to sit down and do it, well, that's great. But if you don't know how to do that, find somebody who does. Find someone. I mean, there are people in the church that are gifted at financial stewardship and crunching numbers, and they can just take your budget with a fine-tooth comb and just find all the areas where you can squeeze and pinch and save and really have a concrete plan. Because if you don't have a plan, you don't know how to, because in a moment of making a decision about spending money, and if in the past you have not exercised wisdom, well, your past actions are going to more than likely dictate your future actions. And so for you to have something concrete that says, hey, here's my check, here's my governor, so to speak, on my spending, if you don't have that in place, there's really no hope for you. I mean, you know, to put it that strongly. And so you need something like that in place, and go and get that if you are not able to do that yourself.
One of the things the article highlights, Chris, is interesting in light of just the need for community and for help, is that one of the, this guy's actually a financial psychologist at Creighton University who's quoted in this Atlantic article. He says, you're more likely to hear from your buddy that he is on Viagra than that he has credit card problems. Mm-hmm. In other words, people just don't talk about financial issues and financial need. And so within the church, we need to open this up to the light of community and say, hey, I need help here. I need some counselor. I need some wisdom, or I need somebody to help me get on the right side of this.
Yeah, the thing that the article doesn't tackle is how do we get rid of the shame that we feel? Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that's what the gospel speaks loudest to, is the shame that we place on ourselves. And so the illustration throughout the whole article is this guy wearing a paper bag over his head with a sad face drawn on it. And I think a lot of people feel that, like, they just wear that shame and they don't want to talk about it. They hide underneath it. And I think the gospel can speak to people's shame about not wanting to talk about it. And I think asking somebody in the church for help, you have to fight against that shame that you feel, because that shame can debilitate you more than not being able to pay your bills.
Well, and you've gone through financial peace, I think, Mike. And I remember you posted a video on Facebook of, like, your kids dancing because you guys have paid off some debt. So, like, you've been through some, like, sort of processes here to practice some different things in your life. How did that, experiencing sort of the gospel applying to the shame, how was that helpful to you in just even saying we need to chart a different course for our family?
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. I remember asking one of the financial team deacons in our church to go through our budget. And so, like, you're opening yourself up to criticism there. Hey, look at the last month of all the things that we spent our money on. Tell us what's bad and good and what we can change. And that was rough. It felt rough. You know, like, it felt, but it actually was a really gracious conversation that we had, and we felt encouraged coming out of that conversation. So it was just that initial step of taking that uncomfortable step of saying, hey, we suck in this. We need help. And so please speak into this, and humbling ourselves and being open to hearing that criticism. But then, like you said, we were able to celebrate paying off that debt. It just highlighted the freedom that we felt, and not just financially, but, man, if we didn't take that initial step of making ourselves vulnerable, opening ourselves, being honest about where we've messed up, man, we wouldn't be able to experience that joy and that freedom.
We, Mindy and I experienced this on some level when we first got married. We moved to Arlington. I was teaching at a Christian high school, and if you've ever taught, or if you do teach at a Christian high school, you know you don't make a lot of money. And we were in Arlington, Virginia. We moved out there. Minnie didn't even have a job yet. And we had an apartment, and we had school debt and a little bit of credit card debt. But we had enough to where money was tight. And there wasn't a lot. There was definitely, if we looked at our bills and how much I was making, no way that was going to add up. the Lord blessed Mindy, got a temp job pretty quickly, and then got a full-time job. And I remember us, like, we were sitting at this fast food taco joint, and we just started, we were just celebrating that she got this job full-time, and we looked at how much she was making, and it was ridiculously low, but it was more than we were expecting. And so just those, you know, those little blessings. But the thing that when we first got married, it was like, okay, we need to commit ourselves to getting out of debt. So paying off our school loans, paying off the little credit card debt we had from our wedding. And it meant making decisions about things that weren't fun necessarily, about where we would eat or cutting coupons or, you know, doing all these little things. But eventually too, it became like a game. And it was, how can we save money in these different areas? And we laughed about the little things that we would do. And at the time, you sort of do that to kind of alleviate the fact that it's not fun. But as you just said, Mike, at the end of that, when you can rejoice and see, one, God's faithfulness to you, seeing that the frugality and the decision and the wisdom actually paid off and there's blessing in it, it really begins to make up for all of the hardship and the pain and the struggle that you go through. And then you learn a lot too. And so just to kind of piggyback off what you said, it is not easy, and getting out of debt and making these decisions are not easy, but the joy that comes after it is incredible.
The other thing to think about that's coming to my mind is how a Christian should be living as a contributor to both the church and the culture in which he or she lives in, instead of just a consumer. And I think culture is constantly throwing at us how to just consume more and how to be an idealist and how we deserve all these things. And that's just not realistic. And I've been sitting here thinking about how all the media that we take in and all the social media that we take in, all of that stuff's plastic and ideal. And so we're just constantly inundated with all these things that we think we need all the time. Instead of a Christian worldview would step back from that and go, man, how can I contribute here? How can I participate in culture and not just consume culture all the time? Because that just that just plays into your financial playbook the whole time. And with that, how do I then engage people around me with my finances, going back to generosity and things like that? So how can we be contributors and not just takers, is also a financial situation. And $400 is not that much, by the way.
Yeah, it's really not. A sort of broader worldview starting point here is just the reality that everything we own is God's, not ours. We're stewards, not owners. And I actually think that's a simple thing to say, but it's profound when you start to think about the implications of it, because many people say, well, if I just had more money, then I'd pay off my debt, or then I'd give, and I'd do this or that. And I just think, like, that excuse in itself betrays the fact that I'm thinking about it as, like, this stuff's mine and it's already spoken for, and so I don't have any more that, you know, if I started with, like, every dollar bill that I have belongs to the Lord in the first place, so what does it look like for me to honor him? That's a whole different question. Mm-hmm. And it changes how I think about spending, how I think about paying off debt, how I think about saving, how I think about giving. If I'm just like, man, I'm accountable for all these dollars. They belong to the Lord. I get a chance to use them, invest them for the good of the people who depend on me and for the good of the world. And I think if you started asking questions like, how does your spending glorify God? How does your spending contribute to the flourishing of God's people in the world? That might even just be an interesting barometer of, is your spending primarily about self-gratification, self-comfort, or is it primarily about providing opportunity and resource so that people can thrive and experience life?
One of the encouraging things and also discouraging things, no matter how you look at it, is when we start talking about finances, and if all this stuff is actually true, then it feels like the hole is really deep, and then we've dug this thing that we cannot escape. And so that just comes down to the little decisions. It seems like we end up in big holes because of all the little decisions that we've made along the way. So I think it's important to just practically step back if you're in this quandary and look at, man, what are all the little decisions that I do financially, the little decisions that I make financially that get me into a bigger financial rut and hole. And for some of us who have, you know, drank the Dave Ramsey Kool-Aid around here, we joke about it because we're on this cash system. And then when you're out of cash, you're like literally out of cash. Well, that's hard when it's like the 21st of the month. You got to figure out how to get creative about the next 8 days or whatever. But it seems to work, you know. And so there's little decisions that you can make along the way to keep you out of a major rut.
So you're just saying there's little steps to get you in that hole. There's little steps you got to take to get out of that hole. So it doesn't happen overnight. You got to be patient. You got to work towards it.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, even if you look at companies that go bankrupt, it's not like they, well, sometimes I'm sure that they make one major decision and they end up going bankrupt. But it's usually like over time, all this money has not been made, and over time, all this money's been spent. And so over time, that thing goes bankrupt. And I think the same is true of our personal lives. Over time, I think I'm entitled to these kinds of decisions financially and these types of purchases. And then over time, I realize, oh, geez, I'm in quite a lot of debt here. So I think you have to reevaluate what do you think you need, and then go back to the drawing board on stewardship and contribution.
Yeah, and the idea that the more we accumulate actually brings more stress and more complexity. I think Ecclesiastes 5 he talks about this, and it's just an interesting concept of we chase after and get more and more, and our culture is constantly putting that pressure on us. But that just, it's like heaping up more burden on us. And we think it's going to make us happy, but actually makes it more complex. So interestingly enough, so Mindy and I just bought a house, which was great. The Lord blessed us. But this past week, as we're settling in and kind of getting accumulated to a house, it's like, wow.
Everything can break.
Yes. It's like all this extra responsibility.
All this stuff's
gonna die. Yes. And so there is a sense where you take that on and it's good and it's right. But it can also become an unhealthy burden if you give yourself so much to the accumulation of stuff. And so even just as a Christian, the value of the simplicity, a value of, and the gospel frees us not to have to live with all of this stuff. And that freedom allows us to be generous and to serve and not to be burdened by all the stuff I have to take care of. So that's something that's been in the forefront of my mind.
Yeah. Preach that.
Yeah.
This article makes an interesting point that I think it's good to remind people of, which is that credit is not the same as savings. Hmm. And a lot of what's happened in American society is people have used credit cards to replace savings. So it's like, well, if my air conditioner breaks, I'll just put it on the credit card, you know, because I don't have cash. The problem with that is you're paying 22% interest for that. You know, like credit card companies, there's no boundaries on the interest they can charge, and they're in it to make money off you. And so, especially for Christians, just realizing, hey, if I have, what does Dave Ramsey say, $10,000 in an emergency fund, or $5,000, or what's his sort of threshold?
Depends what step you're on.
Oh, sorry.
But
yeah. What's step
first
one?
First step is $1,000
okay,
in your
which
emergency.
That's great.
But eventually, you know, you get to the point where you can live off it for months if you don't have a job.
Good. So just getting that emergency fund built and stop and not relying on credit cards is a major, I can't tell you how freeing it is. My wife and I have a credit card and we pay it off every month. And I've had the privilege of never being in consumer debt. And it's just so freeing to go like, we're not buying anything we can't pay for. Like there's, you know, I got a mortgage and that's what my debt looks like. And so it's incredibly freeing because you don't feel weighed down by that crap. How are we going to make the credit card payment this month? And what if this breaks? How are we going to pay for that? There's the stressors, right? The anxiety, the fretting, the fear, the worry, all that stuff goes away and is replaced with just sort of like a joyful generosity where we sort of get to ask like, hey, how can we help people out? And we got some extra money over here. What can we do with it to put it to work for the good of somebody else? And those are fun conversations to have.
Yeah.
So let's bring this conversation back to the point you made, Mike, which I think is the most interesting gospel application to the article, which is for lots of people listening who are at various places of financial health or unhealth, the most important thing is being free from shame so that I can say, well, here's who I am and here's where I am. And so what do I need to start doing? Mm-hmm. The gospel of Jesus Christ is what takes a paper bag off the head of the guy in this article, right? It's what frees me to say, because shame is always driven by, I know I'm not living up to some ideal that I have for myself. And so when you look at the book of Proverbs and like, okay, don't be in debt and have savings. And if you know that like, I'm not living up to that right now, the immediate response is sort of like, well, I feel like an idiot. I'm like, what's wrong with me? How come I got myself here? Knowing that Jesus died for sin and then frees you to say, hey, whatever reality is, it's okay that that's what reality is. Maybe you made some bad decisions to get there. It's okay to acknowledge that. Maybe you had some unprecedented hardships that got you here. It's okay to acknowledge that. There's no shame in saying, man, here's where I am and here's where the Lord wants me to be and how do I get there? And so I want to encourage folks listening to this podcast, especially in one of our two churches. Number one, know that Jesus died to defeat shame and guilt. And then two, man, wherever you need help, encouragement, support, counsel, wisdom, bring that into the light. And take this area of your life as seriously as you would take any other area, because this is a place where the worship of the Lord Jesus Christ has something to say to us.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, the momentary shame that you're going to experience when you show somebody your budget, like Mike was saying earlier, or just get it all on the table as far as like, here's how much debt we have, or here's where we're at financially. That's a momentary shameful conversation, and it's a good shame. Like that's a healthy shame, which is like, hey, I'm illiterate here financially and I need some help. And so please help me. I'm trying to think through the emotion of that. Even for me years ago, probably, 7 years ago or so, for me, that was a moment for me. And then thinking through the moment of that shame versus like, man, the amount of stress or the amount of management internally that you have to figure out, the trade-off is like night and day. So if you have to go through a momentary shameful moment, that's easy compared to all the internal shame that you're posturing and stressing out about. So I would say, man, come on out, you know,
come into the light. And I'll say this, if you're in a healthy gospel community, nobody's judging you for what debt you have or don't have. Like the people around you are like there to serve. And so I remember a few years ago, a single mom in my gospel community in our discussion voiced the fact that she had some financial concerns and worries. And so my wife and I were just like, hey, why don't you come over this week and let's talk about it. So we asked her, she brought over and laid out, I mean, like 7 different credit cards with exorbitant amounts on all of them, you know, and was just super worried about like, are you guys going to think I'm just a complete moron? I was like, heck no, let's figure this out. And so I got on the phone and started calling credit card companies and saying, hey, what's the payoff here? Let's negotiate this. And like, she was like, I can't believe somebody would do that for me, because I was overwhelmed by that conversation. So just know that there's people around you that like, rather than responding with judgment or with, you know, like what's wrong with you, you're going to respond with, hey, how can we help? Let's dive in here and roll up our sleeves and get to work and figure out how to get you in a different place.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about today might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join us next week on the Wednesday Conversation.